But you did it for 10 years, and can you talk about some of the people who came up here?
Yeah, I mean, well, a huge list of people, and I guess to preface it, if you're living in a place like this, one of the things we had to decide, if there isn't any quote-unquote culture, capital C or small c, you quickly learn that you have to develop it on your own, whatever it is. But for us, it involved the press and of course, the reading series. So we brought in Purdy, Earl Burney, Dorothy Livesay, the other generation of writers, my generation, Michael Ondaatje, Margaret Atwood was here, John Newlove, George Bowring, Daphne Marlatt, Robin Blazer, and eventually my last big event was the Words Loves Conference in 1980 or 81, and I got Robert Creeley to come and headline the event, under much criticism, I might add.
Because he's an American?
Yeah. And
what was the argument?
He's an American.
Cultural capitalism.
Yeah, cultural capitalism and...
Or colonialism. Sorry.
And here again, my reasoning is not... I wasn't involved in those arguments. I was involved in the practical question of how draw people to Prince George for a poetry event. So we had a college circuit, so we'd do this conference every once or 2 years, and it worked out well. But people said, well, you know, you better have it in the fall, the weather's good and everybody can come up, and you know, it'll should work out okay. And then I'm kind of devious, I'm thinking, hardly any of these people have been to Prince George. What's the worst time of year you can have people come here? So I set something like February the 10th, the coldest day of the year. And I thought, let's get them up here so they can see what it's like through this long stretch of eight months. So I had that in my head as a joke. And then the second thing was, well, they're not going to like that. What's really going to get them here? And everybody was talking about Robert Creeley, so... I met Robert Creeley in Vancouver, and I said, would you like to read in Prince George sometime? He says, yeah, man, just keep in touch. So I sent him a letter, and it was a funny exchange as well. He says, if you don't accept this, I will exile you to Shelley, B.C. So we were kind of, you know, humorous.
Jousting
a bit. And yeah, he said, sure. But I thought... Second thing, okay, if Creeley's coming, major big guy, so people are going to be attracted to that, and they're going to make arrangements to come. So that part worked. And then the side story is that Creeley told me that he had, his last reading was in a big theater or a big amphitheater of students somewhere in the Eastern Seaboard, and that the professor took him into this room of many, many, many students and said, well, without further ado, this is Robert Creeley, and then left the room. So Creeley's sitting there, what am I supposed to do, teach, read, or, you know, I mean, he could stand on his feet, I think, and no matter the situation, because he was a talker, you know.
He was an improviser. And
totally. So then Creeley wrote me back, and he said, Barry, he said, I've got an agent working out of Boston, and he said, I've decided that I can't take chances in this stuff anymore. They're paying me peanuts. I can't go into these situations with, he said, if I get paid, I don't care what it is. And I'm thinking lately that because he had kids in university coming up and stuff, he probably had to generate a lot of cash, you know, or he was probably thinking that way. So this guy from Boston writes me, Creeley, $2,000. And I think, oh, Christ, this isn't going to fly.
It's a lot of dough in 1980.
It's a lot of dough. So here's where it pays off. If the students like you, you can do damn near anything. So I go to my friend John Oscroft, and I say, John, this thing's going to fall through. And he was on the student council, and he said, how much do you need? And I said, $2,000. He said, do you need any more than that? And I said, no. And he says, well, I'll get you the $2,000. And I says, how can you swing that? Well, the people on the council were giving huge amounts to sports teams, like way more than $2,000. And he just thought, well, it's time for us to take, you know, the student body, look at it and say, okay, we're putting $2,000 into a poetry festival. So sure enough, we got the money and sent it off and took care of that aspect of it. But yeah, it was a lot of money. And to look at your question again, it wasn't just that Creedy was an American. You could see I had an operating theory here that I wanted to get, 100 people from the Lower Mainland or BC to the conference. I wanted to get them here in winter, and I used Robert Creeley, who I wanted to meet anyway. I mean, this is the beauty of this series. I got to meet all these people. Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't just, you probably know the system. You wouldn't do this, but I've done readings where you go in, a cursory introduction. You have to lie about the audience size to get the money. You leave, you have maybe one beer with somebody, get on an airplane and leave. But up here, people would get snowed in. Some people just decided to stay an extra day or two. So I've had great long sessions with all the people I've mentioned, and became friends with most of them.
Margaret Atwood sleeping on your floor upstairs.
Yeah, that was in our old shack, our first shack. And that's kind of an interesting anecdote too, is that we had a Samoyed dog that gave birth to 9 pups while she was with us. And she helped me give birth to these 9 pups. It was in the morning after her reading. And then, it's not a pleasant story, but we didn't have a lot of money. Like, we couldn't have 10 dogs in a one-room shack. So Charlie says, well, we got to kill some of them. So Charlie and I told you, Charlie's fearless in the face of anything.
So you put him in a paper bag and throw him in the lake?
We got some... This is horrible, and I hope, whoever's listening to this doesn't think I'm a monster, but yeah, I'll say Charlie did it.
We'll just edit this part out.
You got chloroform.
Oh, jeez.
And it was horrible.
Oh, my God.
But
there weren't shelters at the time, were there? Could you bring them to the shelter, and was there an adoption process or anything like that?
I don't think there was, because Joyce, she's a huge member of the Pound here.
Society for the Prevention.
Yeah, SPCA. Again, it was just nothing we could do immediately. These dogs, I don't know if there might have been a dog pound. It would have been a vet, but, I don't even know if we checked into it. But the funny part of it is...
There's a funny part of it.
There is. All my stories. So I'm writing about Margaret Atwood's visit here.
Uh-huh.
And I say, Margaret Atwood helped me euthanize 9 pups.
Oh. Oh.
And so that part, that was never published, but I've retracted it. I keep the story, but then I reverse the procedure here. Birth and death are pretty close together in this case.